should play that for our guest, this Tom Whaley, who's a drummer, the way that starts out.
I've got a few in mind for Tom.
Because that would be, I mean, Tom Whaley, Saints VP, joins us every Monday. He's a drummer, too, and he would love that as an opening. What are some of the best drummer openings out there? I don't know. I mean, I'd have to stop and think.
I think the one I gave him by Grand Funk Railroad on Monday was a good one. He loved that one.
Yeah. Yeah, he did. He's not going to complain. Now, these drummers, they hear drums are good. You know, they don't care if it's snare, if it's whatever it is.
We go with Van Halen, Hot for Teacher.
Yeah, they're good with it. They don't mind. You know, in a minute, we're going to be joined by Bill Pennington. He wrote the book, Billy Martin, Baseball Slaw Genius. This book is terrific. And I don't say that about a lot of books. I picked it up, started reading. Billy Martin, okay, I've known. What else am I going to learn? I just learned a ton. I mean, his relationship, how he grew up in a hard scrabble neighborhood in the Bay Area, and his mother was, you know how we didn't use the juicy comments by Britt McHenry because she was a little bit of a potty mouth?
Yeah.
Apparently, the way it was described, every word out of the mouth of Billy Martin's mother was a curse. In every sentence, you'd hear a curse word. So he grew up combative. And also, I mean, his players, a lot of them, some of them couldn't stand him, but a lot of them just loved this guy. He adored Casey Stengel. You know, when Casey Stengel died, he took some of his, the shirts they wear underneath their flannels or their baseball shirts or jerseys. And he wore them, you know, when the Yankees would get into the playoffs, just to feel a little bit closer to him because it was his idol. You know, Casey Stengel's the one who pretty much he played for him in the minor leagues, and then he certainly played with him for the Yankees, and he became Casey Stengel's the extension of Casey on the field. And I want to give you all this background so we don't have to rehash it with Bill Pennington. The research that this guy did was impressive to get the information and the facts that he has in this book. There's been other books about Billy Martin. Is there a sports book? What is your favorite sports book? Have you read a lot of sports books?
I think my favorite one was probably the one that was co-written by Keith Olbermann and Dan Patrick, called The Big Show.
Was it funny or light or what was it?
It had a little bit of both. I mean, they would each write. One had bolder letters than the other, so you know which one was talking. And they'd have almost banter back and forth in some chapters. And one of my favorite chapters was, I believe it was Keith Olbermann was the main one that penned it, about the 100 players that aren't in the Baseball Hall of Fame that deserve to be there.
Yeah.
And every one that he would say, Dan Patrick might say, this is why this guy shouldn't be in there.
Now, was there a chapter where Keith Olbermann, that was just called I'm a D-bag? Or he didn't have that chapter?
I don't remember if that one had
there been. Are times, I do find him entertaining at times, but sometimes he just gets on a...
It may have missed the final edit.
His high horse and just doesn't stop. We're joined by Bill Pennington, who wrote Billy Martin, Baseball's Flawed Genius. Bill, I appreciate you taking the time with us. How are you?
I'm good. How are you, Bob?
Good. Bill, I got to tell you, I'm glad you missed the buildup I gave earlier, because you probably would get red-faced and be embarrassed, because it is one of the, if not the best sports biography I've ever written. I picked it up because I said, well, I'm going to have him as a guest in the next few weeks. I'll read the thing. I was so absorbed in this book, I thought I knew a lot about Billy Martin. It is a phenomenal book. You did a great job with it.
Oh, thanks. I really appreciate that. That's nice to hear. You said something that, you know, was part of my goal, which was that, you know, people think they know everything there is to know about Billy Martin. And I just knew from what I've covered him as a Yankee beat writer in the 1980s, and just seeing what sort of has evolved over the last 25, 30 years, I just knew that people were kind of leaving out a lot of stuff. And I just kind of knew there was a bigger and more complete story out there.
Well, you know, you grabbed me from the beginning when we met his mother. You know, anyone who curses in every sentence is, you know, that's going to get my attention. And his mom tells so much about him because he basically was a carbon copy of her, combative, wouldn't stand for any crap, and just did what they thought was best. And whether that was right or wrong, they did what they thought was best and right.
Yeah, that's true. They lived by, he was brought up to, you know, live by his own rules. I mean, buck authority and do whatever you think is the right thing to do. And you know, he had a lot of freedom that way. I think that was, I think that was one of the things that, you know, endeared him to people. I mean, that's one of the reasons he was so popular, is that he did things other people wish they could do. You know, he told his boss to shove it, you know, many times.
That's right.
And, you know, just defied authority, went with his gut on things, and made up his own rules. You know, didn't manage or play baseball by the other rules that people, you know, imposed on him. And, you know, people wish they could live their lives that free. Now, of course, you know, that gets in a lot of trouble. Periodically, but you know, he lived the life he wanted to live.
We're talking to Bill Pennington, who wrote a great book, Billy Martin, Baseball's Flawed Genius. And, you know, there's so many different ways when you look at the book that you could take away from it. But even the stuff about when you got into Billy's, you know, he learned from Casey Stengel, but also, you know, he'd go with a triple steal. And the way he attacked baseball and would look for the nuances of other managers and players, it's just that he had a great depth to it. And the biggest thing that disappointed me, not in the book, but all the years later, that Reggie Jackson still can't let it go. He couldn't show class when he's, you know, nowadays when he's talking about Billy Martin.
Yeah, you know, those two just never did get along. I mean, they had some truths along the way, but they, you know, it's true. Reggie still, harbors a lot of resentment towards Billy. And, you know, I mean, the one thing I did learn in research that, you know, I didn't completely remember was that their feud does go back a long way. And I didn't really know that. Or remember it, that, you know, in 1969 when the Twins are racing to the AL West, you know, championship title, the first AL West race there ever was. And who was trying to, you know, beat him was the, you know, Reggie Jackson's Oakland A's. And he's a young player at the time, but, you know, I didn't realize that, you know, Reggie hit a couple of home runs against the Twins, kind of watched the ball go out, took about 20 seconds to get around the bases. And, you know, the next time up, Billy threw at him, you know, and there was benches clearing brawl. And, you know, it goes all the way back to there. And every couple of years they kept squaring off, whether he was in Detroit, Billy was in Detroit or Texas, and Reggie was in Oakland. So it's not a surprise that in 77 they had their problems.
Now, you did cover Billy Martin for a period, as you mentioned, and we're talking to Bill Pennington, who wrote Billy Martin, Baseball's Flawed Genius. If, as I read it or read it, it seemed like, did you like him at the time? But, and if you didn't, it's like after you talked to all these people, you liked him a lot more.
I think both those things are true. Let me put it this way. I did like him. You know, I was a young reporter, and when I took over in 85, the Yankee beat, Yogi Berra was the manager, and I said, okay, I can handle this. You know, I'm in here with these, you know, sharks in general in terms of the journalism world. But I can handle the covering Yogi Berra. And then 16 games of the season, Billy Martin becomes the manager. I was like, oh, wait a minute. I didn't sign up for this. I, you know, I don't know this guy. And I know I've heard a lot about him. But he turned out to be a pretty easy guy to cover. He was often good to new people. He felt like, okay, you know, we're off to a fresh start. So I did like him. And I certainly learned a ton of baseball being around him. And it was a great education for me, just having him explain things. And I didn't have any problems with him at all, but I would say that I didn't know everything that I do know now. I hadn't, you know, met and talked to his sisters, and I hadn't, you know, talked to his four wives. They're all still alive. I hadn't talked to them, and so I got a different appreciation for how complex and certain multifaceted he was, which I didn't know. You know, I mean, I saw a little bit of it. But, you know, I mean, you know, take, for example, his time in Minnesota. I mean, he basically lived a suburban existence with it, you know, literally had a white picket fence.
Yeah, Richfield, right? Yeah.
Yeah, you know, and he, you know, sat at home, and, you know, I read these stories. They called him a country squire, you know. So I didn't know he had those, you know, all those things that happened in his life. So meeting his son and talking with, you know, all these people that were his family and friends, I definitely got a better education in the total ability.
Now, the one that you mentioned, the four wives, and it seemed like there was a common thread through each of them. His family and friends weren't crazy about any of them, but the last wife, you really didn't get into. Why did they hate her so much?
you know, these family squabbles, I guess their family is no different than any other family. I mean, there was, you know, who's supposed to get what, you know.
Oh, that's what it came down, yeah.
You know, there was a piece of jewelry that on Billy Martin Day that was given to Billy's mother, but somehow ended up in Jill's presence or in Jill's possession, and then it was given back to the mother. And I mean, there was, you know, I got a he said, she said, is what I got, or yep. she said, and I just, some of that I just said, you know, I'm not going to spend too much time on this, but suffice to say is, yeah, his family back in Berkeley, California and stuff, they're all a hoot. They're all really fun to talk to, but they're definitely related to him. There's no shortage of opinions, you know.
And there's so many great nuggets in there, and we're talking to Bill Pennington, wrote Billy Martin, Baseball's Flawed Genius. The Minnesotan, the guy who owned the restaurant, and I thought of it just before you had written the comment that you got from George Steinbrenner, or Steinbrenner said, is, why is this guy Howard always around when something happens? Was it Howard Wong? Was that his name?
Howard Wong, yeah.
Why does something
Howard
always happen Wong. When he's with Billy?
Yeah, I know. He owned a restaurant in Bloomington, and Billy then hung out there, and they became friends. They used to do everything together, and somehow Howard Wong happened to be there. You know, when he punches the
marshmallows,
the sports writer in Reno, and then he's there when he punches the marshmallows. Yeah. So after the second one, Eddie Saber, who's Billy's agent and lawyer, and calls up George to talk about this. And the first thing George says is, who the hell is this Howard Wong?
But Bill, honestly, everyone reading the book is thinking the same thing. Why is Wong always with him when something bad happens?
And I asked that. I mean, Howard Wong is not alive anymore, but I asked Eddie Saper, who I talked to a lot of times, I said, so what's the end of that? He goes, well, actually, Howard was a really quiet guy. He just was Billy's friend. He's kind of an older man at the time. He wasn't starting any fights or anything. He just was the guy. He was kind of the chauffeur. He just happened to be there all the time.
Well, he just hung out a lot, I guess. That's pretty good. Now, Bill, when you decided, again, Bill Pennington, Billy Martin, Baseball's Flawed Genius, if you like any type of biographies, it's a phenomenal book. But so many other books have been written about Billy. You obviously knew I could get more and give more depth to it. Did you vacillate at all, or when you decided, what made you decide, I'm going to do it, because it needs to be told this way?
Well, I think there's a couple things. It goes back to what I said at first. I think, you know, that I thought there was a more complete story. I thought that he was being kind of shoved in a corner and stigmatized, Billy was, as just this sort of dirt-kicking lunatic, you know, this guy who didn't really, you know, wasn't a thinking man, you know, a strategist, and was just a guy who was, you know, got angry and did things. And I thought, you know, people don't know the whole story. But I also knew, frankly, that, you know, that I wanted to do it with a lot of original research and go back to his childhood and talk to everybody. And I knew, you know, this would be a project that if you wait 10 or 12 years, maybe you can't do it. Maybe those people aren't able to tell you those stories. So I knew there was a certain, the time was right in that way. And then I also, you know, went after certain people that I thought would be key to helping me. And they all agreed to help me, like his son and his widow, who had not spoken in 25 years and since his
That's
death,
great,
really.
Yeah.
So I talked her into talking, and or I said to her, this is a real good chance. You know, I mean, this is your chance to tell your side. And so once all that fell into place, then I said, okay, I think I can give the big story that I want to give. It talks about him in all these places he went and why he was beloved in Minnesota and Detroit and Texas and Oakland and New York every time he got fired. So, you know, that I knew then that I could do it.
Now, when you, because you touched on this too, Billy Martin in the Hall of Fame, it's amazing.
Yeah,
you know,
it is.
I mean, are you, because I, that, as a player or a manager, doesn't, I mean, you could almost make an argument he should go in as both.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think we know why he's not in. You know, he's not in because, you know, people want to remember the dirt, as I said, dirt kicking and the barroom fight. But so if that's why they want to keep him out, well, all right, I guess that's the reason. But what I don't understand, and I do hear this, is people say, well, he didn't really win that much. And I go, my God, are you crazy? I mean, he took over these terrible teams and still compiled a winning percentage that's better than 13 managers who are currently in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
He revolutionized the game in a lot of ways. You know, when he took over in Minnesota in 69, you know, the triple steals and the, you know, hitting the ball the other way and the trick plays. I mean, he not only won, he excited baseball at a time when it needed some excitement. That was kind of a dead ball era, you know, and he got people in the stands, and everywhere he went, he not only won, he raised attendance usually from anywhere from, you know, 25% to 400%.
Yeah, first year.
Yeah, and they, you know, and it was exciting baseball. Fans loved it. You know, Billy Ball wasn't just about winning; it was about let's have some fun, you know? And so, I mean, all of those contributions to the game of baseball, you would think he would get more consideration for the Hall than he does. Now, Tony La Russa and Bobby Cox, they're both trying to change that. They're both trying to work from within. They're both in the Hall. They're trying to get him, you know, considered by the Veterans Committee because they both felt like he was a better manager than they were. They, you know, they want him in.
Well, I hope that. And in his 5.53 winning percentage, I came up with a stat of the 15. You mentioned the ones above him. Of the 15 below him, a dozen are in the Hall of Fame. So getting overlooked. Hopefully the Veterans Committee does it. Bill, I really enjoyed talking to you. Great book, like I said. Bill Pennington wrote Billy Martin, Baseball's Flawed Genius. You got to check it out. You got to buy it. It's a great book. I really appreciate it.
Thanks so much, Bob. It was my pleasure. Nice talking with you.
All right, take care and good luck. I'm sure it's a best. I know it's a bestseller, so it's going to keep going there for you. Good for you. All right, thanks again, Bill. All right, take care.
Yeah, thank you. All right. Take care.
We're going to come back. This is your time. You want Twins tickets to this weekend? You just call 651-989-9105, 651-989-9105. We're going to have ourselves another spelling bee. Spell some Twins names, and you could win the tickets. We'll go two, we'll go three, we'll go four. However many people give a call, 651-989-9105, you are going to be in the running for those Twins tickets. We'll be right back. We're back. Big news, breaking news. Give it to them. Twins win, Twins win.
8-5, Twins pull out the victory.
Two in a row.
This game, too. So they got to witness the third win of the season.
Two wins in a row, third win. This team is on fire.
Take that.
So longest winning streak in 5 years, right? Two games, something like that.
Something like that, right. Yeah.
You know what? In honor of the Twins and in honor of, we had our last guest, Bill Pennington wrote the book, Billy Martin, Baseball's Flawed Genius. Billy Martin managed the Twins in 1969. Let's go to our first caller, Kyle in Minneapolis, Little Spelling Bee. Kyle, how are you?
Billy Martin managed the Twins.
Oh, I love hearing myself, Kyle, but turn down the radio.
Our first caller, Kyle in
Minneapolis. There you go. It's great hearing myself, though. Kyle, we got an easy one for you. You have to just, we're going to go to the Billy Martin Twins.
Kyle.
We lost Kyle.
Yeah.
The hell? I guess he wasn't very impressed with hearing me.
Moving on to Rick.
Rick, how are you?
Good, Bob. How you doing?
Good. All right. Let's go. If somebody wants to replace Kyle, 651-989-9105. We're going to do a little spelling bee of Twins names. We're going to start off with Rick. And Rick, we're going to make it so easy to start. This way you ease yourself into it. Rod Carew. Spell Carew.
Okay, that's pretty tough, but I'm
going to
say
C-A-R-E-W. No, you're wrong. No, that's of course that's right. No, that's right. Good job, Rick. Hold on. Let's go to Lacey from St. Paul. Lacey, how are you?
Good, yourself?
I'm doing good, thank you. You're spelling Twins names from Billy Martin's team in 1969. Mm-hmm. Spell Tony Oliva. How do you spell Oliva?
O-L-I-V-A.
Very good, Lacey. Now, if someone were to call in the next few seconds, we'll add them because where Kyle dropped off, 651-989-9105. You better do it fast, though, because we're in round two already. Let's go to Rick. Rick in Shoreview. Rick, are you ready?
I am ready.
Harmon Killebrew. Spell Killebrew.
Hey, Killebrew. K-I-L-L-E-B-R-E-W.
Rick, you're on fire. My God, you're unbelievable. Now we go back to Lacey. Now, Lacey, this is a guy who... Not only did I work with this man for a quarter of a century at the Pioneer Press, he was a pitcher with the 1969 Twins, Charlie Walters. Spell Walters.
W-O-O-D.
Walters?
Yeah.
Well, I'm sorry about that, Lacey. Thanks for trying. But you know what? We are going to... Let's go to the other... We'll give them... They have to catch up to Rick. Who's calling, please?
We don't know yet.
We don't know yet. That's all right. Ask him. Who is this? Yellow. Uh-huh. Okay, then.
Kyle's back.
Kyle, you back?
I'm back. What's going on?
All right, Kyle. You have to come up with two names, spellings now, okay? We'll give you an easy one to start. Dean Chance. Spell Chance.
C-H-A-N-C-E.
My God, you're unbelievable. All right, now you have to get back into it. Second round. Jim Cott. Spell Cott.
K-O-T-T.
Say it again.
K-O-T-T.
K-O-T-T. No, it's K-A-A-T. Kyle, thanks for calling back, though. That's all right, my friend.
All righty.
All right. That's all right. Who do we have now? Rick's sitting there waiting for his third.
Zach from Maple Grove.
Zach, you ready?
Yes, sir.
All right. We're going to give you, as we give everyone an easy one to ease themselves in, Jim Perry. Spell Perry.
P-E-R-R-Y.
Nice. Now, it's a little tougher. We're going to the Billy Martin twins from 69. Spell George Mitterwald. Spell Mitterwald.
I'll give her a shot. Mitterwald.
Very nice. All right, so who do we, we're going back now to, we have somebody else there. We're going back to Rick.
Rick.
We're going back to Rick. Rick, how are you? Ready, Rick?
Ready.
All right, Rick, this is where we start separating folks. Ron Peronoski. Spell Peronoski.
Okay, P-E-R-R-A-N-S-K-I.
Ooh, hold on, because that doesn't mean our next, there's an O in there. It's O-S-K-I. But Let's see. It's all right. You can still be in here, because we'll see if our other contestant can spell the name properly.
Back to Zach.
Zach, you ready?
Sure.
Frank Quillacy. Spell Quillacy.
Quillacy?
Yep.
Q-U-I-L-L-I-C-E-Y?
Well, I guess we have a tie for incompetent spelling here. All right. I'm going to give you both the same name. We'll see how that works as a tiebreaker. And whoever spells it correctly will win. Well, you know what? We'll give you different names. We're not going to do that. We'll see what happens. Let's see what. You know what? Let's try that. Go to Rick. 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 Spell Ted Ulander.
Ulander. U-E-H-L-A-N-D-E-R.
Let me write this down. U-E-H-L-A-N-D-E-R. Okay, now let's go to our other contestant.
Zach.
Zach, spell Ulander. Maybe we should do it whoever comes closest on this.
I was going to say the same as him.
Well, you're both a couple of idiots. No, you're not. All right, then let's go to, here's how our tiebreaker is going to work. The winner of this will win Twins tickets to Saturday's game against Cleveland. And I'm going to let you go first, all right? Tell me, how many games did this is the team we've been talking about, these players. How many games did the 1969 Twins win? Throw a number out. Any number. Any
97.
Number. Okay, let's go to...
Back to Rick.
Let's go to Rick. Rick.
And what does the other guy say?
He said 97. You know what? If you want to go with that, too, I'm going to let you. You pick whatever number you want.
Let's go with 97.
Okay, we have another tie, because I think that maybe... Who's our first contestant?
That Rick. Was,
Rick?
We have Rick right now.
Yeah, and who do we have?
Zach.
Zach. Put Zach back on. Zach, how did you know it was 97? You Googling?
What's that?
Have you been Googling the 1969 Twins? You were dead on.
No, I'm driving, man.
All right. All right, then here we have another question for you then. Another tiebreaker, because I let you both answer the same thing. You both gave the same answer, okay?
Okay.
Give me what the Twins' winning percentage was that year. No, that's too easy. You might be a math whiz. I got a different one for you. All right, here, let's go with this. All right. How many games... No, tell me how many fans went to the games. How many home games did they have at Met Stadium?
Oh, man, I couldn't even...
Well, just throw out a number. Whoever's closest wins.
46,000.
For the whole year?
Oh, for the whole year?
Yeah, I'm giving you another shot here, Zach.
Oh, man.
They played 100...
1.3 million.
Okay, let's go to... Let's Rick. Go to Rick. Rick, how many fans did the Twins have at Metropolitan Stadium?
1.31 million.
So he's going with the over.
Well, we didn't tell Zach he could take it out to the third. You guys are killing me here. All right, I'm going to give him one last thing here because it was 1.3, but we didn't tell Zach that he could take it out to the nth degree. Okay, this one, go back to Zach. We'll get an end to this sooner or later. Zach.
Yep.
What did Carmen Killebrew make? How much money did he make in 1969? Give me the number.
45,000.
All right, now go to Rick. Or Kyle. Kyle, how much money did...
49,000.
How much?
Rick.
49,000.
And what did Zach said? 45?
Said 45,000.
It was 80,000. Congratulations, Rick. You're going to go to the Twins game and put Zach back on. Hey, Zach.
Yep.
You were phenomenal. Do you like blues guitarists? We'll give you tickets to John Bonamassa, who's going to be
Bonamassa.
I read the thing already. All right,
yes,
hold on. You're getting tickets to see one of the greatest blues guitarists ever.
Awesome.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. Come right back. We will talk to Jim Suhan from the Star Tribune and SuhanUnfiltered.com. We will be joined in a moment by Jim Suhan from the Star Tribune and SuhanUnfiltered.com. You know, we got a lot to talk about. You got the Wild, you got the how about the Twins, by the way? Did you know they are tied for the longest win streak currently in the American League? Two in a row?
That's
unbelievable.
Amazing.
Jim joins us now. Jim Suhan from the Star Tribune, SuhanUnfiltered.com. Jim, I don't know what they're going to do with this team. I mean, I think they'll start calling Malone, Cy Malone. He's 2-0. The team's the win streak at 2 tied for the longest in the American League right now.
Well, the key is, Bob, that if you're a sports fan, you have to pretend it's a football season. And every win is really big and every loss is really big. That's the important thing, is to either panic or celebrate every day. Because every single baseball game determines whether you're going to win the World Championship or not.
It's so true, Jim. It's so true. But were you there? Are you in town or are you in St. Louis? You're here, right?
I'm here. Chip is doing the first two games of the series. I'm doing games 5 and 7. And I'm kind of presuming there will be a 5 and a 7.
Yep.
So I'm here in town. And I will be watching that. I watched part of the Twins game. I will be watching the Blues tonight, obviously.
Well, you need some time at home. I mean, you've been on the road.
Yeah, I feel like I've been on the road for like 6 of the last 8 weeks or something like that. It's been crazy.
Well,
I'm not really complaining. I'm just saying it's been crazy.
No, but I mean, it's nice to get home and relax, because you're right. You were at spring training, and then you were traveling Final Four. You're at the Masters. You're picking up on baseball. It's been a heck of a couple of months for you here.
Well, it's very important to be home long enough that they're glad to see you go again.
Yeah, my family's always glad to see me go, and I don't go anywhere.
We have that in common.
Yeah, definitely, we've got that. Now, what do you see? You think it could go to 7?
Here's my gut feeling, and let's face it, nobody knows what's going to happen. Picking games is stupid. It's just conversational. That's what we do, even though it makes no sense. My gut feeling, which is worthless, is that the Wild wins this in 6 or 7 games. I think the Wild is ready to play well. I think Dubnyk gives them a big advantage. I think the depth they've acquired at forward with all the Fletcher moves gives them a lot of options. They can play different kinds of lineups, different games. They can match up well. I think, you know, Parise and Suter are playing really well. Dumba, I think, gives them an edge. I like the way they're playing. I think they're playing better right now than the Blues. Blues are a more accomplished team, but I think the key to this series is if the Wild can make the Blues feel a little heat in games 1 and game 2. When both of them have the Blues start hearing from their fans that they never advanced the playoffs, have them start feeling like chokers, I think that's the psychological edge the Wild needs to establish. I just have a feeling the Wild's good enough to make the Blues nervous and wins a close series.
Well, we talked to Tom Reed about that earlier. I mean, the last 2 years, they've made the quick exit, so that's on their minds, and it's on their fans' minds for certain.
Yes, absolutely. And it's pretty good hockey base down there. I mean, we all know that Minnesota sports hockey fans are very knowledgeable and very passionate. But I went to high school 3 years in St. Louis, and my high school had a really good hockey team. Most of the schools have really good hockey teams down there. It's a pretty knowledgeable fan base, and it can be kind of loud, but it can also be, when it comes to this Blues team, they're a little Minnesotan. They're a little paranoid.
Well, you know, just to back up for a second, where do the kids that play good hockey in Missouri wind up going?
I don't think they produce a ton of great national talent, but it's pretty good competitive hockey. It's not like Minnesota.
So they're like D3 kids. Okay.
No place is like Minnesota when it comes to quality, depth of hockey. But it's, you know, I went to a lot of high school hockey games. It was pretty good stuff.
I had not known. I wouldn't have thought that was a hockey area in Missouri.
They have good soccer. They have really good soccer, too. I think the main reason for that is there are so many, it's one of those cities where most people send their kids to private schools, and the private schools have the money to have good hockey programs, and they have kids who want to play sports, and there is youth hockey there, and I think that's kind of the reason it's big there.
You know, the other thing is, because you said it, and you did say it the right way, now's not the time, but in the off season, we need to talk to the front office of the Wild and Craig Leopold. Either be Wilds. I have a tough time with the Wild is, because I keep thinking of them in the plural. They should be the Wilds.
No, that's even worse.
I know it's worse, but I mean, why did they hang a team like that with just a singular sounding team where it sounds wrong to me to say is, but that's proper. The way you did it was right.
Yeah, it's a horrible, horrible team nickname to begin with. It's just this, you know, it's the kind of team nickname that comes out of a bad marketing meeting where the dumbest guy in the room talks as much as the smartest guy in the room. It's a horrible nickname. It's horrible for sports writers that you have to pretend it's a singular when you're always talking about a team and you want to be able to refer to them as a you know, group of a bunch of people. It's horrible. Now, you know, it hasn't exactly hurt their popularity that it's a horrible nickname, but it's a horrible nickname.
Well, and I mean, if they want to correct it at the paper, I always treat it Wild R. If they want to fix it, let them. Sometimes it gets through, sometimes it doesn't.
That's actually a pretty good way to go about it.
Yeah, I think it's, well, for me, it's the safest way. Now, this is not a huge deal, it seemingly, because we knew that AP was going to be reinstated. What do you think? Will it happen soon? Will it be draft day? Do you think he will be there when the season opens in Minnesota?
I think right now what's happening is Goodell is trying to, you know, Goodell's just a stuffed shirt. He's just trying to pretend he has some influence here. Look, you know, I'm not going to reinstate Adrian Peterson just because I could. You know, I'm going to make him sweat some. This is Goodell because he's just kind of a weenie, just trying to make himself look tough. And every time he's done that, he's really kind of screwed up. Actually screwed up pretty much everything he's touched in the NFL in terms of player discipline. So this is just weenie moves. I do think that Peterson will be reinstated fairly soon, and I think if he's going to be traded, it'll probably be on draft day or draft weekend.
Yep, I agree.
I would say at this moment, my gut feeling is that the Vikings don't get a good enough offer to think it's smart to trade him. They bring him in, and they just try to win games this year with him.
See, I actually think that the Cowboys have already decided where they're going to go. They'll give up the first, but they're not going to do it until the last minute, hoping the Vikings, they can beat them down and scare them and make them think, well, we better take that two or three, whatever they're offering. But we'll see where that, you know, where that does wind up. And, well, the only team, let's see, we've talked Twins, we talked Wild, we talked Vikings. And Jim, could they have, for the fan base and the ownership, they made sure this game was not in doubt from the first quarter, giving up 47 points.
And it's not very hard when you're playing against a great player in Russell Westbrook, a decent team that felt like it had to win, and you're starting. I mean, no, let's. I don't want to even mention any names. I don't want to pick on anybody. But the Wolves, you know, they have Wiggins who's learning the league. They have Levine who's learning how to play point guard, even though he's probably going to be a two guard in the future. What else do they have on the court? They got nothing. They got a bunch of guys who shouldn't be in the NBA. They don't have many of them either. They're playing about eight guys, and about three of them should be in the NBA. So you know, it worked out. You know, not that anybody wanted anybody to get hurt, but it probably ended up serving them well that they ended up accidentally tanking. But they did tank, and they're gonna, talk about gut feelings. I have a feeling this organization is about to get lucky for the first time in its history and get either the first or second pick and get a chance at a really good big man to pair with Wiggins and Levine and Shabazz. And I do think Garnett's going to come back, and I wouldn't even be surprised if he plays well for 10, 15 minutes a night. I think this team could be fun next year.
Oh, it could be a lot of fun. You know, we talked to Jerry Zagoda after we spoke to you, and he had said, and I give Flip credit for saying this, all year he has said, look at the body of work, and he loves Okafor, according to Jerry, who works with you at the Star Tribune. And I'm glad that he does, because a lot of these guys, they sway based on one or two games, which is why Towns is, in a lot of people's minds, has leapfrogged Okafor as the top pick. And but if he's there at two or three even, you know, somebody moves Russell up to two and they're down on Okafor, the Wolves can't screw this up.
No, the guy from Latvia, people are comparing him to Dirk Nowitzki.
Yeah, so Przinga, as you called him, Przinga.
Bazinga,
that's right.
Yeah, and so I don't think they can miss. And Okafor is interesting because I didn't like the way he played, in the NCAA tournament, and he didn't play much defense, and he got himself in foul trouble, and he didn't always seem to play hard. But he has almost the ideal big man body. He can run. He can move. He can pass. He can score. He can finish. And he has hands the size of hubcaps. Huge hands, and that's a great advantage for a big man. He can do a lot of things one-handed in the paint. You know, that, so I won't say who told me, but I was talking to a Wolves official yesterday who was raving about Okafor. Maybe that is their goal.
Well, I don't think if they wind up with him, I think they're going to be they'll be just fine. Jim, always great talking to you. SueAnnUnfiltered.com. Are you going to be talking tomorrow with Russo from St. Louis, or you have him today before the game?
As soon as you go off the air, I want you to send all the crowd, the studio audience that you have there, tell them not to wait around for your autograph. Send them over to the Liffey. 4 o'clock at the Liffey. Russo from calling in from St. Louis. We're going to do a Blues Wild preview show. We'll make some other sports too. And then tomorrow night, 6 o'clock, Zagota's with me at O'Garris. And we're getting, oh, by the way, we're also, people will show up at the Liffey today at 4, and we're going to be giving away a lot of Guinness stuff and some books, some like cool sports books that are brought along.
That will bring them in. You give away some Guinness. That's a great lineup to have Russo before the game.
Free stuff.
It's like, yes, they do.
It's like the old joke, Bob. What's a sports writer's favorite four-letter word beginning with F?
What?
Free.
That's exactly right. I had a.
And what are sports writers' two favorite kinds of beers?
Free and what else?
Cheap. Free and free light.
Free light. That's pretty good. Jim, as always, thanks. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Thanks, man.
All right. Jim Suhan, Star Tribune, Suhan Unfiltered, SuhanUnfiltered.com. We're going to come back and we're going to talk to Rick Haro. Nobody knows the business of sports like Rick Haro. We'll be right back with Rick. I goofed up. Rick did. I think he did send me something last week, and he said he was flying and could not join us. So we will not have Rick Haro. In his stead, Sam Ekstrom from the Wake Up Call on Sundays, 105theticket.com, Cold Omaha. What's the latest Cold Omaha offering from you?
A ton of twin stuff from our whole Twins team, Brandon Warren, Tom Schreier, and myself. We have a lot on the Twins. I wrote about Oswaldo Arcia on today's top featured story, and I also had a piece about the home opener from Monday. But plenty of Twins coverage, 105theticket.com.
And I'm going to do it because remember we did the thing with we have the giveaway for the tickets. And you mentioned the Twins. And finally we had a tiebreaker, three tiebreakers. And they finally we settled it with Harmon Killebrew's salary, 1969 Twins. Okay. Killebrew was he was the highest paid Twin at $80,000. Number two was at $60,000. Do both of you know some of the Twins? You remember the names that came up? Here. I'm gonna give you a bunch of names. The guys that made the most money. You tell me who would have been number two on the list. All right. In no particular order: Ted Ulander, Cesar Tovar, Leo Cardenas, Bob Allison, Johnny Roseboro, Dean Chance, Jim Cott, Tony Oliva, Rod Carew, Craig Nettles was on that team, Charlie Walters, who I worked with. That's just to name a few. Who would you say was number two among the most paid players after Harmon Killebrew?
Seems like Carew would be the logical pick, but I guess I don't know what year he took off in his career to earn that kind of raise.
How about you? What do you think?
Cott.
Kitty Cott? Kitty Cott actually was tied for third with Dean Chance and Tony Oliva at $55,000. I never would have guessed this. Johnny Roseboro made $60,000. And Carew, relatively young in his career, he made $21,000. You know what's shocking to me? In terms of when you're looking at it, so I'm going down 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12th highest paid Twin, and he basically, and I worked with him, like I said, for 25 years. Charlie Walters, who's a columnist with the Pioneer Press, he spent, as he describes it, 40 days and maybe 39 nights with the Twins in 69. He made 10 grand. And that, at the time, was not bad money.
Not bad at all.
You know, it was when you're considering that Rod Carew made $21,000 and Greg Nettles made $11,000. Boy, the money was so different then. Yeah, Kitty Cott made 55, Oliva made 55, Dean Chance 55, Allison 39.5, Leo Cardenas with 36.5, Cesar Tovar 30,000, Ted Ulander raking it in at 25K. Again, this is 69. The reason I use that year is just before we had our little spelling bee of Twins players from that team, we had on Bill Pennington, who wrote Billy Martin, Baseball's Flawed Genius. honestly, I'm not blowing smoke. The guy's not on anymore. It's a phenomenal book. But I figured a little tie-in, Billy Martin hit the team the 1 year he coached here. And the problem, it's stunning to me that he's not in the Hall of Fame, Billy Martin. It's a travesty. As a player, he was the spark plug to those championship teams in the 50s. And the guy had a great winning percentage with teams. He didn't last long with them, but every team he took over, he turned around. In the first year, the team got better immediately, and their numbers, the Texas Rangers, when he took them over, it was pathetic. I mean, they couldn't draw. They were drawing maybe 5,000 or 6,000, if that. And all of a sudden, they're taking in a million or more people a year just because he got people excited.
I don't know if there are a lot of guys in baseball like Billy Martin anymore. Kind of the managerial approach is very passive these days. Look at a guy like Bruce Bochy, Ron Gardenhire, Joe Maddon. Very laid back.
Nobody's fiery.
No.
You know, Earl Weaver back, I mean, and they supposedly, they didn't get along great. There were times when they got along fine, Billy Martin and Weaver, but I think Billy Martin hated the fact that Weaver also would kick dirt on it. I mean, it's like he took his act from him, but he really wasn't a big Weaver guy. Loved, though, Billy Martin loved Tommy Lasorda. Because they had a fight in the minor leagues when they were players, and they just became friends after that. So it was there's no way. I don't see Paul Molitor doing any of the stuff, certainly like Billy Martin, but even like Gardenhire, I don't see him getting up and getting as angry and getting thrown out and tossed out of games the same way.
Well, it's a bummer because with the new challenge system, there's not as much place for the dirt kicking and the hat throwing on the ground and stomping on home plate. That was kind of fun when Gardy would get into it. The crowd got into it. They would cheer him on and egg him on, and it's kind of disappearing from the game.
Well, and it's just not Paul Molitor's MO his demeanor is not. It doesn't lend itself to that. And we talked to Jim about this. You don't want to get too excited, but hey, two wins in a row, tied for the league lead for the current longest win streak
on fire.
The American League. And I do think it's start calling him Cy Malone. He's 2-0. You can't do better than he was started twice, got two wins. How can you expect more from a guy? Actually, Kenny Vargas, too, had a home run since Chris Suzuki had a home run. Maurer, all the way up to 4 RBI. My God, he's on fire at 3 today.
They need Maurer to keep this bat going. Because what is he hitting now, around 300?
Oh, he can tell you exactly
what he's
hitting.
He dropped down a little bit today because he went 1-for-4.
Yeah.
But he had 3 RBIs
today. He had 3 ribbies, yep.
Yeah. No, I like the Vargas power.
Yeah,
did you see the replay of the home run?
281 where Maurer is.
Frozen rope off the facing of the second deck.
Well, that game didn't really exist until it ended, as far as I'm concerned.
Only 17,000 people there, probably not that many.
Well, that's, the home opener is a big one, then it drops off.
Yeah.
It's tough to get off on a Thursday. I don't know why this is an odd time to have a day game in April when you never know. It's iffy what the weather will be.
Smallest crowd in Target Field history today, I read.
That was the smallest?
Yep.
Well, I would have thought there would have been something smaller than that. Small on a day game. A lot of people do get away, but I guess maybe it was tougher for him. The guy that's ready? Holy cow. Well, anyway, the guy I'm keeping an eye on because he's on my rotisserie team, Danny Santana. I hope for big things for him. And thank you. By the way, Sam, that was great. You came in and the time just flew by. Sam Ekstrom from the Wake Up... The Wake Up Call Show. That's what it is. On Sunday mornings, 8 to 10. Tune in to hear him and the cackler. Give him a little cackling. Tom Schreier. And you got Nick, right?
Nick Hallett.
Nick Hallett's with you. And we are at also 105theticket.com. You can read all three of them there. Hellboy and I, David Helmer, thanks for keeping things running. For the most part, okay.
Yeah, I did okay. Yeah.
You did okay. Don't get cocky. We're gonna turn it over to Superstar Mike Morris and Ben Holson, and we will be back tomorrow. Looking forward to it. When the man comes around.